Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to my home here in the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. And it's great to have you here tonight for another edition of Breaking the Silence Live. So we're excited about that. And we have some great guests tonight. And we have an awesome lineup of guests that's coming up in the next 2 months. I am just jam-packed with people that are second to none. And tonight is going to be no exception. This is going to be one of those nights that you're going to want to text somebody right now or get on the phone real quick and say, hey, make sure you listen to the program tonight because you're going to like it. This is going to be some great information that affects everybody. When we think we're outside of arm's reach with what we're going to be talking about this evening, well, congratulations, you are dead wrong, because this is happening in every community, every skin color, every economic class, almost every organization, but the upper class, the lower class, the middle class, it's happening everywhere, on the bad side of town, on the rich side of town. So we're going to be talking about everything tonight about human trafficking and a great organization and a wonderful innovation that is being developed by this organization that they're allowing some police officers to use around the world eventually. And that's what we're going to talk about this evening. But before we get going, I want to let you know that you can find us and ask questions several different ways. I personally believe the best way is just call in and let TJ with his great radio voice answer the phone, BBS Radio, and at 888-627-6008. And he will patch you right through into the program tonight and be able to ask a question or make a comment about our guest and maybe be able to help you out with something you're concerned about. Or you can give right on. I'm looking at it right now here, Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page, and we have people watching it right now, and you can comment on that there, or you can text me the old-fashioned way, 832-396-6525, and I will, during the commercial break, go through these, and if there's a question involved in all of the comments, I'll be glad to share that. So you can do that several different ways tonight. But once you get involved, make sure you have a pen, piece of paper, because there's going to be some websites, there's going to be some things, some information you may want to write down. I had an interesting week last week. I spent 2 days at the Conroe Fire Department at the Fire District, which is about 45 minutes north of Houston, and spent two entire mornings with four different groups. And I'll be back up there Tuesday training the last two groups. So we do the entire fire district, all the firemen, firewomen, the EMTs, because the great state of Texas has required them to get human trafficking training. And if they don't get that by a certified instructor, they can lose some of their credentials and their ability to be able to do the job that they feel like they're called to do. And I love that kind of mandated education. So I'll be going back up here again Tuesday and making that drive early in the morning. And I had an interesting thing that I want to share with you just before we bring our guest in tonight. I believe it was Monday. I went up Monday and Friday. and then I'll go up again Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. And up on 45 interstate here, you go downtown and then you kind of hang a left and you keep on going north. And I was plenty early because, you know, my name's Gregory A. Williams, and the A stands for anal. So I always try to get at every place 2 or 3 hours early so I make sure that nothing happens. If I have a flat tire, you know, whatever happens, if I get lost, I'm going to be there in plenty of time so nobody ever waits on me. That's just the way I am. I'm on 45, making great time, listening to KHCB on the radio and just enjoying some music. And all of a sudden, we came to a dead stop. There had been a traffic accident up further down the road, and I did not move for about an hour and 15 minutes. Just absolutely stand still. And as I was sitting there, I don't know if you're like me or not, there's an anxiety level that starts boiling. And I noticed that I was starting to look at how far I have to go, the estimated time of arrival according to the GPS, and feeling all four lanes starting to close in on me because we wasn't moving. I couldn't have got out of that traffic jam even if I wanted to. The only way was to be throw open the door and walk away. And the anxiety level started to rise. But I somehow, which is unusual for me, I kept it under control. And the reason why was because I had planned, I had prepared, I paused, and I played out the stress. I had planned for that ahead of time. Now, let me see if this scenario, and then we're going to get our guest in, works with you or not. When your phone is completely charged, you're in that chill, relaxed mode because that battery shows that it is absolutely charged, just as the illustration and the analogy of us being mentally charged, prepared, planned, paused, ready to take on the stress. And we have a full battery. We're relaxed. We're chilling. Our heart rate is steady. We're connected to whatever we need to be connected with. We're happy. We're fully charged, ready for anything. And this is what's supposed to be the body's default mode, a full battery, calm and safe. But then all of a sudden, when something happens to us, and keeping with the analogy of the phone, you notice that the alert is coming up on your phone and it says low battery alert. Do you want to go to safe mode where it saves power and you kick it on and it starts taking out functions that normally keeps everything going, but it puts them disabled, so it keeps the battery saved of what you have left. In that emotional panic mode of your battery emotional, mentally going down, your heart starts to activate. Your palms start to get sweaty. There's a high alert inside of what's going on in you. And most of the time, you will react to it in one of two ways. One, you will confront it, which is the fight mode. What's going on? I don't understand this. I had this plugged in last night. I must have had a bad charger. And then you start, you know, acting out and fighting out on that emotional trauma that's going on inside. Or you throw the phone in the backseat of the car and go, I tell you what, I'm done with this. I'm done with that company. Even though it's not the company's fault, it's not the phone's fault. And you just run away. And that's called the flight mode. Your cell phone battery, it's flashing low. And the non-essentials in your emotional battery are shutting down, and those apps that keep us calm are gone. And in that mode, logical thinking slips into the back seat. Calm decisions slip in the back seat. And you start going on a different reaction mode that we weren't built for. And then, I don't know if you've ever been there, but if you get to plug in your phone at all the night before, you try to get on your phone and the screen doesn't even come up. You turn it off, you turn it back on, and there's this flash, and then the screen goes black. That's a shutdown mode. That's where everything in that emotional mind of ours, because of the anxiety of having a dead battery, goes into a freeze place. And it's high anxiety, unable to speak, unable to move. Your body has hit a hard stop. There's no place else to go. Like that phone battery is completely out of any kind of internal juice that is going to help you get through the situation you're in until you get back to a place where you can plug into some energy. That is your body saying it's your last ditch effort to conserve any kind of energy when you're facing that serious stress. None of these modes that could have been taken effect during that traffic jam on the way to Conroe this week. None of the modes are the bad guys. Listen, leaning in the camera here. They're not the bad guys. The modes are. They're survival tools that we're made to have. And the problem is panic and shutdown modes are triggered by everyday stuff. Deadlines at the office, relationships going sour, traffic jams, and our best self shows up when our logical brain, which is the prefrontal cortex, is in charge. It thinks ahead. It controls our emotions. It makes good choices, and it learns from our mistakes. But when all the anxiety kicks in, our logical brain takes a back seat, and our survival brain starts taking over. We're less rational. We're more primal. And this is why we say things, do what you mean when the communication starts breaking down and everything feels so much harder than it really is in life. And the goal in life is not to silence our stress. I live in Houston. You're always going to have traffic. You're always going to have traffic. We live in life. You're always going to have stress or anxiety, but you have to listen and respond to it properly. So when stress kicks in, and I learned this in a new way this week, when stress kicks in, check and see what the gauge is on your emotional cell phone battery. Is it in the chill mode? It's full. I have all the juice to be able to get me through that event, through that stress. Is it in the panic mode? Oh my God. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm going to have to fight or get it, run away. Or is it in that shutdown mode of now what I'm going to do? I freeze. Nothing. It's over. And no matter what it is, make sure you have something that you can plug into emotionally to get recharged. And the best thing for me is just pause. Just breathe. The traffic jam will eventually clear up. It's dark outside my windows here on the 19th floor. But I promise you tomorrow the sun's going to come up. There's going to be light out there. Last night we had one dandy storm that came through. The windows were shaking on this building because there was tornado warnings out and it was just raining so hard. When that happens emotionally inside of us and in our world, what's your safety zone? All I can say is you better have a plan for that evacuation route of an emotional trauma of stress. So you know what lane to get in traffic that's going to be able to get you to the safest place when it hits. Because I was having no warning whatsoever. Lickety split going probably 70 miles an hour through the highway on 45. And then all of a sudden, boom, dead stop. You may run into that first thing in the morning. Blindside you. How are you going to handle it? Don't make it the bad guy. Respond to it in the proper way. And you'll get through it. I promise. Okay, that's all I have tonight. That was free of charge. Didn't cost you a thing. I want to bring in TJ, if you would. Bring in my guest picture right up next to me tonight. And I'm just honored to be side by side with this individual right now. Brooke Ruffin is with us tonight, and she is the vice president and the executive director. And I gather that's of Georgia, Brooke. Is that right? That's what the GA stands for? Georgia, of a wonderful organization called Street Grace. She's been a member of that team since 2018. And assisting with the expansion from 1 to 5 markets, Street Grace is probably one of the most popular, one of the most successful, one of the most impactful organizations right now going. And they are changing the literal world. And I just want to welcome Brooke into the program tonight. Thank you so much. She is 2 weeks away from having her second baby. And I thank you for taking time to be with us tonight. Welcome to the program.
Of course. Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So tell me, what do you do at Street Grace there in Georgia? And how did you get involved with Street Grace? I know you are a survivor, but tell me what is, how do you guys got to where you wanted to say, hey, I want to work for this organization? How'd that all come about, Brooke?
I actually was a performer. I was in musical theater. And so I was working down at Disney in Voyage of the Little Mermaid, doing 5 shows a day, 7 days
wow.
a week. And that was my world. But volunteering had been a close second passion, whether that be in assisted living facilities. I loved working those with memory decline. My grandmother had Alzheimer's and loved how music brought back personalities. So I spent a lot of time there and just removing the shame and stigma from sexual abuse survivors. And that oftentimes, if I were speaking about it, somebody else in the room would come up and share their experience. And so I just never understood why it wasn't table conversation, because it just seemed to make it so much easier once it was. And so while I was pursuing an entertainment career, I wanted to keep involved in the anti-exploitation movement. I had moved to Atlanta and started volunteering at anti-trafficking organizations around town. And I developed a dance class for survivors because it was very important to me. Performing was integral in my healing journey to regain a positive emotional connection to your body through dance. And there's a lot of healing that is done just by seeing your own body dance and establishing a healthy ownership over your body and control over your body that comes with performing. So oftentimes, especially when you are abused at such a young age, you don't want to be seen. You have common, I guess, physical traits among the survivor community of not wanting to make eye contact or not wanting to be attractive, not wanting to be this or be that. And performing really didn't allow any of that. You were putting yourself out there in front of hundreds or thousands of people. And that was very powerful. And I think just kickstarted my healing journey. And I was living life next to other survivors who were taking a very different path than I was. And both, you know, within my friend group and within my family. And I do credit both faith and performing for that. It just to be as productive as you can with your healing journey at all times, frankly. So through that dance class, I developed a love for the nonprofit community in the Atlanta area, but quickly realized I was very undertrained for what I was doing. I loved leading this dance class, but just the emotions that it was bringing to the surface for people, looking at themselves in the mirror, using their bodies in a positive emotional way. You had 13-year-olds bringing their infants to class. And so I was, 23, woefully unprepared for this opportunity, and wanted to be involved in the fight long term. So I started looking into demand-centric efforts, like, okay, well, who's trying to get ahead of the issue so that I don't have to see the stories play out over and over, because I'll probably burn out in 2 years. And you hear about the burnout rate in the nonprofit community all the times, and I didn't want that to be me. And so I joined a social action committee here in Atlanta at a local synagogue that I was invited to. And I was not Jewish, but they were the most welcoming social action committee. And so I started joining, and Street Grace came to do a presentation of the Transaction Intercept initiative there. And that night, I sent an email and wanted to volunteer, continued volunteering for about a year, and ended up being there calling out of work to go for things that they needed and all of these things, and happened to be in the office when they voiced that they were looking to bring somebody on full time, that they needed another staff member. And so I just kind of slid right on in. So that's kind of how I found Street Grace and chose it off of the other organizations, because being demand centric was very close to my heart.
I can't think of a better organization right now than Street Grace.
Well,
I'm involved with a lot of
I'm
them, but
very
this one,
biased, but I have to agree.
no doubt in my book, they make an impact.
Thank
It's not
you.
just local, it's really everywhere, right?
Yes, certain programming is nationally. We have five locations. So we're in Chattanooga, Tennessee now, Atlanta, Georgia, Houston, Texas, and then we have folks on the ground in the Miami-Dade area and Phoenix, Arizona. So those are our physical offices, but we are doing a lot of work in DC legislative wise. And of course, TI is being used across the country as well.
Yeah. And what is it that Street Grace tries to have as their main forte? Because you can't solve everything. You kind of have, hey, this is our strength. This is what we're going for. I think you've already questioned or asked, answered that. But tell me how they're now trying to say, hey, wait, we're going to do something about this breaking this cycle. Is that what they're
Yes,
involved in?
our mission is to eradicate the commercial sexual exploitation of children, or CSEC. We are a demand-centric organization. So that involves s several different lanes, of course, but going after the source of the problem, because essentially, like any successful business, if you remove the customers, then the sellers will move on to the next thing to sell, whether that be car parts or drugs. So we do that, of course, through prevention, speaking to our youth, but not only because you are curbing demand by giving them less supply that is vulnerable, but also that's your future buyer population. So when we're in there with 14 and 15-year-old boys, we're not just speaking to them about them being exploited or them being vulnerable. It's these are the behaviors that you're doing now that could lead you on the path to purchasing by 23. So reducing that buyer population before they take that first step.
So, how did you get involved? Because I don't think, maybe I'm wrong, that people would say, hey, I want to get involved in a human trafficking nonprofit or an organization that's doing great work in that field. Why that field? Why hurt and abuse of children was important to you?
I'm sure there's a more poetic or eloquent answer, but once you know that this is happening, it's very difficult to spend your time anywhere else.
Wow.
It's very difficult to find anything else truly productive when it was so early in my life that I discovered a job that brought me so much purpose. And I've served many different roles while at Street Grace that w would be very transferable, but I don't know how you s we spend so much of our lives working, 8 hours of every day, or I guess on a good week, or in the nonprofit world is not only 8 hours a day, but that's a lot of your life. And so I do have a level of intolerance for wasting my time. And so I don't think that I would be fulfilled by m much else after being a part of this.
So what kind of problem? If somebody's listened to the program tonight that they have, well, they've heard of human trafficking, but they've really don't know much about it. What kind of problem, what kind of situation, what kind of magnitude is this in our country? Are we blowing this out of the water, or are these numbers maybe not even a tip of the iceberg of what reality is?
There are myths out there about sex trafficking, and you see a lot of things shared on social media about, the folded dollar bill at the gas station or the card underneath the windshield wiper. And so there are misleading things. There are things that have been Hollywoodized, for lack of a better term, because we were all forced to watch the Liam Neeson Taken movies, and that's what we think human trafficking is. So if you are thinking that that's what human trafficking is, I can see how these numbers seem but false, but the reality is that so many of these children go to school. So many of these children are on teams and are in ROTC. So if you see it as a truly domestic issue, with the buyers being our coaches and neighbors and uncles and pastors, and you see those exploited not as kidnapped and held up in a hotel, of course that happens, but you see it as the girl who is forced to meet a few clients every Thursday afternoon when she's staying at her aunt's house or staying at her grandparents' house once a month, and the teenage boys down the street are trafficking her. If you see it as the stories that we actually hear, then the numbers become more normalized. And the sexual abuse in our country is rampant simply because we do not talk about it. And we do not talk about what is harming the brains of individuals to make them want to purchase a child. Nobody wakes up on a Tuesday morning wanting to hurt a child. So unless we are looking before the problem happens, we won't be able to rationalize the issue of 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 13 boys will be sexually abused by their 18th birthday. If you look at that number, and then there's a stat that says 70% of the survivors of the commercially exploited individuals in the US were previously sexually abused before it was monetized. But if you are very young and you're an adult does with your body what they please, when somebody brings in gifts and love and payment, that seems like a step up. They're going to take that option over living with their abusive stepdad any day. So if you think about how rationally people would get into this, with it being falsely misrepresented, or falsely presented as a choice, and then look at how prevalent sexual abuse is in our country, it's pretty easy to understand how trafficking is as prominent as it is.
Hey, well, we're going to take our commercial break. On the other side of this, Brooke, what I'd like to do is find out if you're losing sleep over this World Cup that's going to be like 300 plus Super Bowls in 1 year in our country. If that makes you go, oh my gosh, what's going to happen with all these kids? I want to find out, get your take on that. And then I also want to talk about this TII, this initiative that you have, and how this is going to, I think, Change the World, and some other programs that are out there to where we can stop it before it ever gets to the child. That's where I think the key is to stopping all this. We're going to talk about that and a whole bunch more. 888-627. 6008, 888-627-6008. Call us if you have a comment or a question, and we'll be right back after this. Oh, it's about a minute, 23 second commercial. Hang with us. We'll be right back.
Get ready for a life-changing journey. From the best-selling author of Shattered by the Darkness and When the Dark Clouds Come, Dr. Gregory Williams is back with his highly anticipated third book, Embracing Your Scars, learning how to turn life's pain into life's power and purpose. Have you ever wondered how to transform your struggles into strength? Do you want to stop hiding behind the pain, the heartache, and instead learn how to turn those scars into the very fuel that propels you towards greatness? If you do, then this book is for you. In Embracing Your Scars, Dr. Williams shows you how to take the negative experiences of your past and turn them into the very source of your future success. Don't miss out, because your transformation begins here. The book is available soon on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever great books are sold.
Welcome back. And I tell you what, we've really, to be honest with you, we don't run that commercial to try to sell books. We run that commercial because when this goes into podcast next week, they like to have it broken up in individual pieces, and that's the most common and cleanest way for us to be able to do that in that world. So I hope you don't say good night. Why do we go to commercial? We don't have to, but it makes it easier for everybody out there in the podcast world. Well, I believe we go to about 150 plus platforms around Tuesday. So you'll be able to say, "Hey Siri, play Breaking the Silence," and boom, it comes right on, and there you'll be able to see Brooke and hear her. Brooke, tell me what your feeling is about what President Trump said the other day. Wow, United States, this is going to be the most awesome year we've ever had. It's like having 300 plus Super Bowls in 1 year. My gut went, oh no. Tell me what you think about that, because why would that make us that are involved in this field cringe a little bit? What happens?
So it is not that it's a sporting event. It's nothing to do with whatever sport is being played, or if one sport is worse than the other with attracting a certain type of audience. If your city has a large influx of people, there's going to be a large influx of people looking for meetups. They are looking to book time with exploited individuals. It's people who are traveling. So that means that they have disposable income, which is all that you need for a buyer population. So any large event that your city is hosting, unfortunately, law enforcement is preparing, and those in the trafficking field know that there's going to be a large influx of people with funds that they can hide purchases from their family. A lot of them are traveling without their family, especially for sporting events. And that is not even bringing into question all of the betting that happens around sporting events. So the gambling community, involved with these sporting events as well is also another aspect of this, because it could be that a person is what you win. If you were to bid or bet on the right sports team, it could be that is what you are going to do with your funds, or it could be that you are so angry at the outcome that you are finally willing to go through with the purchase. On both sides of the coin, you have people in your town, likely without their families, with the funds to travel.
Okay. So for the people that This is all new to them.
Mm
How does that purchase take place? What's a common denominator of factors that have to be present in today's world? In the olden days, you used to be on the back of a magazine. You used to pick up at a restaurant. You'd see the classified ads on the back of these, what they called the Houston magazines. And I think President Trump, his first term, shut that down with the Craigslist pages and all that. But what's that interaction of, hey, I may want to take this step into purchasing someone for sex?
The even though FOSTA SESTA was passed, that took down, Backpage, a huge nefarious site for purchasing. The trafficking just moved to the next
Yeah.
location. There's one right after it got shut down that was BackBed, so barely changed the name. And they basically have the same back end of the site and they just replicate it, move it to a different name. Very similar to illicit massage parlors, where if you shut one down, their cousin's going to open another one right across the street. So unfortunately, the nefarious sites are very evasive. The most prominent ones right now are Mega Personals and Skip the Games. At one point, Escort Alligator was getting up there, but those are the two main sites that people go on. And you would go and have an account set up, and you would browse as if you were online shopping, different ads. And then you would click in and you would message the person and see when they were available for a meetup. You would discuss time windows. The m highest request I see is a QV, which is a quick visit, under 30 minutes, what services you want within that 30 minutes, and then the price is negotiated. And once that price is negotiated, they won't, say price or cost. It'll be donation is kind of what they use, or they'll send a rose emoji, asking for how much. And then they will set a location to meet up, and it will either be in call, so or the exploited individual will have a location that the buyer needs to come to, or it will be out call, so going to the man's hotel room or meeting at a location in between the two. So it is far more transactional, much closer to ordering a pizza than any normal person would feel comfortable looking at.
I see it on the news all the time. Teachers, coaches are involved in this. I think we just had one, not maybe in San Antonio, I'm not for sure where it was, so don't hold me against that. But they had like a ring of 16 kids that they were putting through this, that they were selling right out of their place of business, like they were nothing. And they ended up shutting, getting him and everybody that was involved with him. It's huge. It's everywhere, right?
Yes, and I know in Georgia, pimping is a misdemeanor on the first offense, which is just horrific. Because we just had a case here in Georgia where last month he was booked for pimping. Then the next month they found a woman locked in an apartment that he had been renting for the sole purpose of selling her out of said apartment. And she was making enough money and, one or two nights to cover the rent of this apartment. And she was held there by gunpoint 4 months. So he was not deterred by a misdemeanor charge. So the first step is having the punishment match the severity of the crime with buying, not being a slap on the wrist, ensuring that pimping is treated as trafficking, removing terminology that still has a swag associated with it. When I was growing up, you would get the catalog of Halloween costumes, and there were about 3 pages of pimp costumes with the brightly colored hats and canes and things like that. And so the fact that we still have that is still terminology used to match such a severe crime really needs to be changed.
Your involvement with this transaction intercept initiative, how'd that come about, and what does that TII mean? How's this going to, from my perspective, going to change the whole landscape of what could be happening when they think they're online making a transaction? Tell me how that works, what it's all about.
Transaction intercept started as a manually run operation here in the Atlanta, Georgia area when we it, about a decade ago when we had to prove the instance of demand in certain areas, especially the very affluent areas in the neighborhoods that would say, "Oh, that's not happening to my kids." And we would post decoy ads, and then on one side of the table, men would be answering the calls. And then on the other side, we would have female volunteers online posting ads and looking at the computer. We were only able to offer law enforcement basically a list of people who called that night. And they could run it against their sex offender registry or something of that nature. But that was the extent of our partnership with law enforcement with it. And we discovered a great need because law enforcement did not have the funds to have a human trafficking task force. They didn't have the funds for the technology necessary. And the process to get $200 approved seemed to be the process, same process as getting $12,000 approved. So just the amount of bureaucratic red tape they were up against that we thought we could come in and provide a solution for. So we worked with our in-kind partners, BBDO Advertising, and they helped build a chatbot which could speak to over 100 individuals at once. And this chatbot would pose as an exploited individual. And so the buyers instead were talking to the bots instead of actually exploited people. And this was wonderful. We were wasting buyer time. We were disrupting transactions, disrupting demand, and getting a lot of great intel on what they were requesting. But only one law enforcement entity could use it at once. So it was really frustrating. And then we were connected with Microsoft's Hack for Good program. And that is essentially their philanthropic arm, where once a year for an entire week, they allow their software engineers to dedicate their time to a philanthropic effort of their choosing. And so we've been the longest standing Microsoft hackathon, project for 4 years now. And the software engineers essentially came on with us, and we told them what we were aiming to do, which was create a free tool for law enforcement that would be disrupting the demand for the sexual exploitation of children. So we wanted to offer a full site free of cost and have it going 24 hours a day. So remove the limitations that a manually run operation presents. And they said, let's do it. Let's meet every Friday at noon until we build this thing. So we've been meeting every Friday for 4.5, 5 years now
Wow.
with software engineers around the world. And you'll have a bot persona expert come on, you'll have a backend developer, you'll have a UI designer. People are showing up to these meetings not knowing what they have to offer the site. And we're able to go through our backlog and send them. So a user story that specifically we've been waiting for this one type of person to show up to volunteer and we'll send it over. So at this point, we do have our own full stack developer on staff. And we are utilizing the skill sets of software engineers all over the world to basically power this transaction intercept 3.0. So that's my favorite part of it, is that it is so passion driven by people who have learned about this issue. Have learned about the limitations that law enforcement is up against and just found that intolerable and dedicated their own time to find a solution.
Okay, so the people are online watching them have a conversation. The chatbot is conversing with a potential buyer, man or woman, but they're and when they actually know, ding ding ding, this person just asked for the transaction to take place. What happens then?
So When I mentioned earlier that people go to these nefarious sites and then they text the number that they see on that ad,
Right.
that's essentially how TI is looped in. That number that you are texting on one of our ads would bring you into a chat platform. And you, on the left-hand side, you can see all of the buyer numbers writing in for your ad, and then you're seeing the chats in this window. And you are viewing the bots speaking with all of the buyers. And if you want to take over a conversation, so either the proper amount of intel, like you just mentioned, Greg, has been gathered and they want to go through with the purchase, it's time to set that location and it's an apprehension op, so you're going to make an arrest. They're going to go in and take over that conversation to set a location because the bots aren't saying addresses and sending buyers all over the city to hotels. They are scripted with law enforcement and the survivor community to gather a certain amount of intel, waste a certain amount of time, but they are not built to entertain a buyer. So it's not going to get too sexual. It's going to discuss, of course, the acts, the time frame, the preferences, things of that nature. We're also integrating with data brokers to bring in some white pages data and things of that nature. So you can look at who you're actually talking to or who the bot is actually talking to. And so you can see when they lie. She's going to ask for selfies, ask some personal details and things like that, so that when an officer clicks in, they have a lot of what they were going to spend their time chatting with this guy on. They can take over, set that location, and make that arrest. Or if it's a deterrence operation, meaning that they are not headed out to arrest anybody that night, they're going to let the operation run its course. The bots will go to the end of their script. And then at the end of the operation, a deterrence message goes out. That deterrence message is customized by the organization running the operation, but it will read something like your number has been registered as somebody trying to purchase sex with a minor and is available to law enforcement. And then we'll list the ramifications of the crime. Because a lot of people still don't know that they're contributing to human trafficking when they're buying sex. And they have this false notion that they are helping somebody through nursing school. They have this false notion that they're helping somebody get out of their mom's house, or, they've normalized it in their head to go to sleep at night. And so this deterrence message removes a lot of that. And then is a wonderful scare tactic. There was a stat years ago that said a first-time buyer calls 8 to 9 times before actually going through with the purchase. So of course, with a lot of these deterrence ops, we're hoping to get in touch with those first-time buyers and scare them out of ever going on again. But unfortunately, a lot of these buyers have been at it a very long time. I was looking at a chat with a buyer that was 70, 72 the other day. And that was heartbreaking, because he was looking for a 16-year-old, but also heartbreaking because how many years has he been doing this? If we are truly looking at the most effective and cost-effective way to fight this crime, how are we not going after the men who can buy so many people during the week rather than going after a victimized person who's one person? So if going after the numbers essentially, which would be the buyer population.
So
So
if the stats are it takes 7, 8 times before a first time buyer ever takes that step to finally purchase, what do you have the stats of what happens after they make that purchase? How long it continues before that cycle stops? Is there any kind of stat on that? The average is 8 times, 10 times, 2 years. What any type of
Meaning,
research on
how
that?
long is a buyer a buyer? I have no idea. I know that I've interacted or seen the bots interact with. 72 is the oldest that I saw, and then I've seen one chat that was a teen buyer and just wanted to get experience, wanted to not be embarrassed in his own first relationship experiences, and so thought that this was a good way to do it. So the buyer life cycle starts in several different ways. There are the people that have been sexually abused themselves And therefore, that is what a sexual relationship looks like to them. And they develop addictions. You have somebody who's been addicted to pornography and they've had that immediate gratification for so long that it goes to more and more risque porn, if you will. It goes to more violent porn, it goes to younger and younger porn, things that are unattainable. Essentially, are the only thing that yields the same physical result for them. And then at some point, that porn's not going to do it anymore and they're going to go out and purchase. So you have the people whose brain has just been damaged by that material. And then you have the people who were raised in it, whose parents were trafficking people and or who were trafficked as a child, who they believe that that is what sex is that it's a commodity and that you go out and you purchase it, and you purchase it so that you don't have to respect the person, or you purchase it because your partner's not willing to do what you have become addicted to, on your laptop or tablet. So, I don't have a stat for how many years are in the life cycle, but there's certainly several different types that you see. You also have people in the military that just believe that they have no time to develop a relationship because of their travel schedule, and so this is what they have to do.
If people suspect, see something that they need to report. What's your recommendation for who do you call? Where do you report this if you suspect something going on? We see the commercials on TV where they're looking across the street and they see this white van pull up and all these people get in and they pull out. Okay, but if you see something that you kind of say, wait, that's not right. What's the best advice to give those folks? Hey, this is how to report.
Well, if you see anybody in immediate danger, definitely call 911. Don't try to call a trafficking hotline. Don't, just go ahead and call 911. Do not intervene yourself because you could put the victimized person at risk and yourself at risk. So the best thing to do is save a human trafficking hotline to your phone because that is who you can call if you're not sure. That's the most difficult part is, okay, well, I see two red flags, but not all five. So am I going to call and make a big deal? Our folks are there to guide you through that. So we do have the Street Grace hotline that you can call. It's 1-833 free 2B, the number 2B. And so the number is 1-833-373-3223. So if you save that in your phone, you won't have to wonder who to call when you do see something, and you'll already be prepared. We trained a bunch of people for the Super Bowl ahead of 2019. There was one woman that was at the training that had described a previous Super Bowl. She had undergone this training, save the hotline. She went to her hotel. She saw a man with two teen girls that were not properly dressed for the weather, which is a red flag that obviously that adult does not have the best interest of the kids in at heart. And so she just rode the elevator with them, pretended like she was on her phone, got off on the same floor, saw what number hotel room they went into. And then went back down to the lobby and called the hotline, and they ended up getting four teens out of that room that day. So you just never know that we all have to take it upon ourselves to be looking out for the youth in our society. But it is a panicked situation. You will second guess yourself. You're not going to feel like a hero. I know exactly what I'm doing, So go ahead and save that hotline. Give yourself the tools that you're going to need. So that if you come into those situations, you can be comfortable.
Give that number out one more time.
It's 1-833 free, the number 2B.
Fantastic. And if they want to get know more about Street Grace, what's the website? The best way to contact somebody there, or just find out about what resources are available on site for somebody that may want to just know more and get involved.
Definitely, it's streetgrace.org. Very easy. And all of our socials are at Street Grace. And feel free to email me. It's just Brooke, Brooke, at streetgrace.org.
Fantastic, Brooke. Thank you. I think I have Colleen on next week.
Yes.
Then 2 or 3 weeks later, I have somebody else with Street Grace that's going to be on. So it's going to be kind of
Oh,
a Street
good.
Grace theme for the next few weeks. But it's awesome because I love being a little small part of it on this survivor advisory thing. I love that. But you guys are doing great, great, great work. And I appreciate what you do. And I think this TII is going to end up becoming one of the most impactful initiatives in many, many years, if not all, in a relatively short period of time.
No, we're very grateful for all of your time. I
Yeah,
really
well, thank you for
appreciate
being on
all of us
tonight.
on here. Yeah.
Okay. Like we like to do each and every week, and I always do this, always in the program with it the same way. I hope I don't bore you with my closing, but every week, I think it's important. You just heard some unbelievable stories, stats, things that maybe you aren't even aware of that's going on in our world, not on the other side of the world, in our own neighborhood, in the very neighborhood that you're listening to this program on, is happening. Somewhere locally where we're at. We'll let you know the best way to be able to stop this and help slow this down is to, when you see something, call. When you see something, respond. When you see something, report. And if you're involved in something like this and you're being abused, you're being hurt, you don't know where to turn, first of all, I want to let you know you're not alone. Reach out to somebody, 832. 396-6525, streetgrace.org, any of these type of things. But I want to let you know there's always hope. Never give up on hope. And the sun will rise, the traffic jam will clear, and there'll be somebody to be able to grab your hand and say, hey, let me help you walk through this hardest part of hell that you're walking through right now, and we'll get out on the other side. You never want to stop while you're walking through hell. Never stop. You keep on going to get out of that. There's always hope. Join us right here next week for even more expanded on this. A board member of Street Grace is going to be with us next week. And she is also a pastor of a church there in Atlanta. It's going to be a great, great program. Join us next week for another live edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless you. Have an awesome week. Good night. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.